We've missed some gold. Well, now that I'm recording, we'll probably just go.
I'm starting off by making a cup of tea.
Oh, yeah. I've started recording, and Drew gets up.
Yeah, I think he does this on purpose now. But yeah, no, just before we were going on air, we were talking about why, and please correct me if I'm wrong on this, right? But as I understand it, at a crossroads or something, Americans can turn right on red at an intersection, right? Now, the theory is they're not crossing over any traffic.
Mm.
But also at the same time, why? That's just insane. Like,
yeah, we have a sensible thing where we either stop completely or there's a forward and a filter lane to one side. Yeah.
I mean, apart from anything else, don't have traffic lights, have roundabouts. But
no, because people don't know how to fucking use a roundabout. We had that discussion started just then. three roundabouts in a row in Midsomer Norton today, and people just didn't obey the rules of the roundabout at all. Yeah.
We did have a hobby when I was a kid, where we just all, you know, 17, 18, we'd all got our driving licenses. At night, when there's nobody around, up near JCB, completely dead roads, no danger to anybody else, but jumping over roundabouts instead of going round them, that's a lot of fun.
As in, like, the ones with the curb and the stuff in the middle, and you just go...
Yeah, just a sort of a bump. Yeah.
Concrete bumps.
Sort of ramp up.
Yeah, it sounds like a great way to wreck your car, yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing, yeah. Like, wow. Now, I go over speed bumps at a ridiculously slow speed, because...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, I've not said this to Alan, and he doesn't watch this, so I'm probably okay, but there's a specific road we go into if we're going into a certain part. We don't go all the way into Bristol, but we go into, like, one of those, you know, industrial parks. Shopping park places in the outskirts, and there's a whole road where there's like speed bumps, and it's not just him that does it. You see the other drivers in it too. Basically, between speed bumps, they'll accelerate and then have to sort of really slow down when they get to the speed bump. Yeah. You think, why not just drive fucking normally the whole way along?
they did that when I used to live in Leicester. There were people that used to do that, like, and they used to just like slam on the brakes as well.
Yeah, it's true, but it's like. Oh, right, okay, I'm at the speed bump. Fucking at least speed bumps. Well, just drive at a normal pace all the way along and you'll be fine. It's meant to be 20 miles per hour. Well, there was a thing came out. Wales have had a 20 miles per hour thing, blanket, in a lot of areas for the past year or so. And the report came out that it's had a huge effect. You know, it's had a huge, good effect.
Yeah.
But, you know, fucking... The thing that annoys me is that drivers, particularly of motor vehicles, think that the roads exist for them. Mm. They forget that the road exists to get people from one place to another, or goods from one place to another. It doesn't exist for them to be...
I mean, the thing is, they are designed around the car. Less than America, but it's a car-based culture. They're designed around cars. I can understand how they get to that entitled place, but, yeah, I mean... Maybe we should say, like, you know, obviously, I assume all of our positions is less cars, more public transport.
Yep.
Safer for walking, safer for bikes, and more public transport, less fucking cars.
And a monorail. I can't believe that episode of The Simpsons ruined the computer. Simpsons ruined that technology, because the monorail is excellent technology.
It is
fantastic. Yeah, it's you can lay track without being too invasive on wildlife. You can build it anywhere at any height, and it's relatively cheap. Like
And also, I got a monorail for you.
Yeah, dirigibles and canals. More of those.
Dirigibles.
Every time you mention dirigibles, I say again, you should read Ministry for the Future, because dirigibles is one of the solutions that they have.
Why do you two say it like that?
Dirigibles.
How do you say it?
Dirigibles.
Dirigibles.
No, I never said that. I said it properly.
We're saying it the same, aren't we?
Dirigibles.
Dire gerbils,
Say it, Hamish.
Dirigible.
Dirigible.
No. Dirigible.
No.
God, with this level of content, we should open a Patreon. Dirigibles.
Incidentally, Chris, you boosted something today that I boosted and then took back once I realised who it was you were boosting.
Who was I boosting?
I can't remember what it was now. But I immediately, oh, fuck, it's him. No, I'm not going to boost that to other people.
It's him. Who's
it was,
him?
What's his face? The fucking, the guy that used to call himself a Linux gamer or something.
Oh, yeah, Gardner Bryant. What's wrong with him?
He's a cock who knows nothing.
What, him and the rest of the us?
Oh, no. He's particularly bad. No, I'm not going to get into this, but he's an arsehole.
Oh, I bet he's lovely.
No, he's not.
No. Hang on a minute. I've got a call.
Hey?
It's the Space Virgin's legal department.
You'd never get calls, you liar.
He hosts his video on PeerTube as well.
I noticed that. Yeah, that's why I boosted it at first. Because, oh, he's got somebody in PeerTube that I don't... Oh, wait a minute. No, it's him. Does he still call himself a Linux expert or something? Because when he first came on the scene, he knew fuck all about Linux. I mean, he was calling himself the Linux gamer, and then he went and said, "Oh well, I'll play games on Windows anyway," or something. Oh, the amount of bullshit the guy went through. He was one of those all evangelical for 5 minutes about something, then changed his mind and got evangelical about something else, and didn't really research anything. And nah.
That sounds a lot like me.
And there,
that sounds a bit like me.
No. There's degrees. There's one particular thing that he did that just really pissed me right off. And it was some association with somebody else who was an even bigger shyster. I've got no time for grifters, except us.
Ko-fi.com/
whatever it is, yeah.
Also in Ministry for the Future, they bring back sailboats.
Yeah, well,
I didn't think we got rid of sailboats.
Imagine travelling. Well, I think they are a thing that is starting to come back, yeah. Because, I mean, the last time we had sailboats in, like, the 18th century, we had 18th century technology. Now we've got 21st century technology. Sailboats could be fucking amazing. Not necessarily, yeah. Like, floppy, so just, like, things, like... curves on the ship that act with the wind and stuff. I'd love to travel by sailboat. That'd be like a big, like an ocean liner sailboat. That'd be fucking cool.
Well, I mean, you could do something over the channel, because that would be quite easy, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I don't really want to cross the Atlantic in anything smaller than a fucking...
No, these are big. In the book, towards the end, they are crossing the Atlantic in a sailboat, and they talk about how it's going to take, like, 2 weeks, as opposed to what it would have taken, when they were powered. But it's, like, super well connected. You've got, like, your own little office where you can work remotely, and, like, it's all set up for taking things slower and being okay with that. And I think that's another thing that we,
that'd be a good thing for life generally.
I kind of like that idea, because how you could hear the ocean, like you could hear it just
exactly, yeah, not just the juke of the engines or whatever, just
Well, since we're not talking about the expanse yet, I might as well tell you, I've also got after we finish this recording, I'll be doing my live radio music show tonight. But also not tomorrow, because I'm probably at some point in the next few days, I'm going to be doing sort of a box opening of PCBs.
Oh, the 2600 PCBs.
Yes.
Oh.
And talking about them.
A deboxing.
Well, that was a spoiler then. That box was
already fucking open. That's a
tease.
That's a tease.
You're worse than that person. You were just...
Yes.
Fake unboxing.
No, it's not a fake unboxing, because they're still in their plastic seal. They're still sealed up. Also,
PCBs were brought to us by PCBWay.
Yeah, literally.
PCBWay for all your PCB needs.
Although I paid for them still. Yeah. also, I've got a new toy arriving tomorrow as well.
What's that?
Ooh. Well, I'll tell you what. The actual thing isn't arrived until tomorrow, but the some of the consumables have arrived today. And there's a bit of a clue.
Is that inkjet? Ink?
No.
Lamy.
Oh!
Lamy stuff, is it? What's that? There's Lamy
cartridges. That's actually very fuzzy for me.
Yeah.
I have no idea what they are.
Are they tapes? Cassette tapes?
Yeah.
Sort of. They are cassettes, but not audio cassettes.
It's not like a BBC microcomputer.
No, they're labels for a label maker. They're label cassettes.
What kind of a label maker?
A handheld one.
Like a Dymo?
No, but a bit more advanced than the old Dymo. But yeah,
I love Dymos.
Yeah, Dymos are cool. Except I don't want to do things one character at a time, so I decided to go for a more modern electronic one. Yeah, they are.
They're bumpy, the embossed labels.
Yeah, they are cool. But this is a fancier four.
What are you labeling?
What am I labeling? Everything.
Yeah.
It'll be handy for moving house and also for. Yeah. It'll be handy for moving house for the boxes, and it'll be handy for electronic stuff. And yeah, there's loads of things. Yeah. There's loads of things where I hate my own handwriting, and it's always terrible. And to be able to put like nice clean labels on things would be a great start, you know. Anyway,
wow.
And that's sometime later this week when I've got time.
I imagine we probably not like full on, but we imagine we all lean a bit stationary nerd.
Oh god, stationary! Like, yeah, I'm a stationary nerd.
I'm a little bit. Stationary
nerd, yeah. I don't give in to it, but it's definitely the impulse.
Yeah. I like my Lamy Safari. It's blending into the wall, invisible.
All to hand.
I've been using this loads. I use it an awful lot. Yeah.
Also, the big chunky, as somebody who likes to fidget a lot, the big sort of that big metal clip. It's just fun to fiddle with while you're thinking and stuff like that. Just
but actually, I don't know how much of a stationary nerd I am. Like,
I'm a huge one, definitely.
I am in spirit more than in practice. Like, I don't buy a ton of stationery because I wouldn't do anything.
Well, we don't do that much paper nowadays.
There is a laminator and a cutting table thing underneath my desk. I've got a shredder.
The only modern use I've seen for laminators,
modern
on the web in the culture is cum tributes.
Okay, I've never used it to laminate cum. No.
No, you don't laminate. You laminate a picture of somebody and then you cum on it.
Oh, I see. Right.
Record it. So you can clean it off and reuse it.
Like Margaret Thatcher, for example.
Margaret Thatcher would be a good one. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
I thought you meant you like came into a bit of plastic and laminated.
No, that would squidge everywhere.
It would make a mess.
Also, heat it up. You'd be cooking the cum.
That's
fine. You could mail it to people.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Well, that's what when he said cum tributes, I just assumed it was some sort of weird thing that people like drew dead. You know,
it's like when you get those like samples of like rare earth elements and stuff like that, with a little laminated package. Hamish's cum, 2025.
Dust.
Just
speaking of which, I finally here we go. I'm usually the one that's not as bad as you two, but I'm going to give you one, or misses. Just before we went to start recording, I went to the loo and I finally got a blackhead off my penis. That's been
good. That is, it's annoying when you get a spot on your genitalia. It is uncomfortable.
It was just this little blackhead, and it was just hanging around. Finally got rid of it.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Oh, did I tell you?
com/thepolarbear.
Pardon? Yeah, exactly. Aims the polar bear. The polar bear. Yeah.
Getting some clearance.
I was going to say, I should have kept the little blackhead ejector and laminated it to send as a prize.
No. I'm sorry. It's hard to find my line, but
cum was okay, but a blackhead. It's just, that's just a bit of dirt.
No. I've never squeezed spots. I've never been a spot squeezer because it's fucking disgusting, the shit that comes
out. Yeah, but you clean it. You don't just do it, you know, you actually do clean yourself afterwards.
Wait for them to go dry and then just, you know, scratch it off.
Yeah.
I use, whenever I get like a spot or something, they've got these little circles that you can buy in Boots, like stickers, like little plasters that you just stick on them. And I quite like them. It stops me fucking fidgeting with them.
Yeah, I'm terrible. I don't get them very often. But with longer hair, I've noticed I've got a couple again, and I was like, I need to be careful with that. Yeah. It's because of the heat.
Why
my
hair's
hair? Because the hair's touching my face.
And that just like what spreads the grease around or something?
That always did for me. Yeah. Maybe bacteria as well. Just generally.
Yeah. When I say grease, I mean general muck.
Yeah.
It's me. You can say whatever you want. You know.
Although there's this new. I don't know if it's new, but there's this product called Acne Side that I found has really helped clear up.
Sounds like something for killing teenagers.
Haven't tried it for that, but I'll report back.
That's from Boots, isn't it? This has come up. I think it came up on a freebooters. We should really get a sponsorship from like PCBWay and Acne Side.
And what about Lidl? Actually, Lidl, yeah. I got this shirt from Lidl, if you can believe it.
That looks like a nice t-shirt as well.
It is a nice, it's actually a Parkside brand. You do like hardware and garden tools and stuff.
Oh yeah, Parkside.
T-shirts.
Yeah, and this is just a
I like thin t-shirts, and that looks nice. You know those thick t-shirts almost feel like towel-in, kind of like, ugh. Yeah, I like very thin t-shirt.
This is a very thin. Depending on the season, you know, I like thick.
I don't like the feeling of, I mean, this is definitely aughty, but I don't like the feeling of clothes touching me. If I can feel clothing touching me, I feel very uncomfortable.
Yeah, I like baggy. I prefer baggy. Yeah, what freaks me out is when you get a round neck collar that you can feel.
Oh, the first thing we're going to do when I put a t-shirt on is stretch the neck out.
The other thing I forgot to mention about my new toy, which I haven't got yet, which arrives tomorrow, my new label maker, they all take certain amounts of different size labels, label cartridges. But generally they do run about 12 mil, so it's usually something like 6, 9 and 12. But mine does 6, 9, 12, 18 and 24.
Ooh.
So it can do big labels.
24 mil. 24 mil, that's 2.4 centimetres. That's a chunky label, that is, yeah. Mm. Ooh. Oh, yeah, got the ruler.
Rule.
Rule.
Yeah.
I can't remember which is which.
Well, this is a rule.
Okay. A ruler has a little extra bit on the end.
Need a mnemonic to remember that.
Well, a ruler has a little bit
a ruler
extra
is a person who's heard.
And the thing. Yeah, there we go.
That's genius.
Chris,
I just thought of that just, yeah.
The show's over. We're not going to beat that.
Yeah. No. Sorry, no expanse to date. Right, I've stopped it.
Oh, I've peaked at
stationery. I've just noticed more stationery to talk about. We've got, like, you know, all sorts of stuff up there.
We almost saw Peanut. There he is.
Hey. Unfortunately, he's dead.
He's just passed out as usual.
Looking forward to the mukbang.
He's passed out.
I think of myself as a stationery nerd sometimes, but you know what?
I definitely am.
We do such little with paper. Cannot realistically claim, other than a couple of nice pens. And when I say nice pens, I'm talking Lamy Safari and a party.
I use my printer quite a lot. I still print things out a lot. I do a lot. For example, talking about the PCB for the cartridge thing, I printed out, like, there's a whole list of all games for the Atari 2600. Sorted by ROM cartridge size, and I edited out and printed out the entire set of 4K ones, and I've gone through and highlighted what are likely ones that I'm going to put on.
I just do that as a text file, I think.
Yeah, but how?
I mean, partly because I can't lose a text file.
Yeah, but you know.
Oh, I don't know. I've lost text files before.
Yeah,
I you know, embarrassingly, I'm really bad at search like certain commands on the command line. I still like have trouble like finding files in a file system.
Find is actually very simple and very worthwhile learning.
I do need to do it. I've got like several videos on YouTube.
It's like regex is one of those things I need to spend more time.
Never learn reg. Regex is not worth learning. Just look.
But
it
you
up
need
when
it.
You need,
you need certain things.
Learning it would take like 5 years in the total in your life. You're going to use it for like, you know, five times. It's not. Yeah, just look it up when you need it.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
It's arcane.
But also,
people object to this, but there's an old saying, if you got a problem, you decide to use regex to solve it, now you've got two problems.
But speaking of things that you type, Drew's finally got, well, I've finally gone on to DistroBox. I finally got my head around that.
What's DistroBox?
Very easy, isn't it? Yeah.
So DistroBox, basically, can you describe it, Drew? Because I don't quite...
It's a very minimal way of running a different Linux distro in a container on your running kernel. So if you want to, for example, Chris on Debian, the packages are older on Debian, and you know some things just aren't in the repo. So we wanted to run news. What's it called?
Newsflash.
He wanted to run Newsflash, which isn't in the Debian repos, so he installed an Arch container and then just installed the Arch version of Newsflash, and then it just runs seamlessly as if it's a normal application.
So you have to, have to install Arch itself, do you?
No, not really Arch itself. You're installing, so it's running on your Debian, in Chris's case, it's running through the Debian kernel, and then it's just a containerized version of Arch. So
like for the installer type setup.
So it's stuff like Etsy is Arch's version, stuff like that. But it's like a DIY flat pack that isn't shit, essentially.
Sorry, headphones.
Yeah, so I can basically just run stuff from the Arch repo.
I have an illustrative image, actually.
I just had a look at the website.
Yeah, rather than flat packs, because it's basically it's one container for all of the things I need from Arch, rather than I don't know how the hell flat pack does it.
Here you go. Here's an illustrative image.
Ooh.
So on the left is my native Arch, and then on the right is a Debian, a container running. And so I do a bunch of things, so you can see that like it thinks it's Debian. It's got Debian stuff, but like it's the same kernel, but it's basically Debian, yeah, containerized on the Arch kernel.
The thing that that still spins my head a little bit is when I do like ls in the home directory, it's the same home directory.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So yeah. Where is the physical files on my hard drive of say Newsflash?
In a container image, in its own file system. I think they use overlay it onto. I think it's overlaid. I think they use overlay. This is beyond my technical, you know, blah blahs. But I think it's just now, an overlay.
I know Pac-Man works. Is there an easy way to get the AUR? And do I want to do it? I don't know.
You would just install an AUR helper in the same way you would if you were running Arch. So if you go to the Arch,
like Yay, for example.
Yeah. So just go to the Arch Wiki, go to, I think the page, it's not called the AUR, but if you search the Arch Wiki for the AUR, you'll get the instructions as to how to
install an AUR package. Install Yay, and then you can just install all the rest using Yay. Like, I use Yay for everything. I never use Pac-Man itself.
See, I like palindromic.
I just realized I like palindromic applications, because I also like Cocoon, which is CAC, K-A-K, and Yay, Y-A-Y.
You were.
There's probably others.
You.
Getting started. It seems
it's a lot more straightforward than people think as well. Even just to build.
You basically just pull a Git repo, run package build, and then install it. That's it. It's three steps basically.
Yeah.
And then you just use Yay. Then so I will walk you through it.
Yeah. Just do. Cool. Yeah. That's what I do when I install a new setup. I just install Yay using the manual AUR thing, and then just do Yay for everything else. That's it. Yeah.
Once you've got Yay installed, you're fine. Is Yay not available in the Arch repos?
No. And I do think it's one of those things just to make it a little bit harder.
Yeah, I don't think they want to be supporting people who are using it without thinking about it a little bit at least, which makes sense to me. Yeah. It's not elitism or something.
If you know what you're doing.
Yeah, it's because if you're going to start using AUR, you really should know what it is doing, even if it only means installing one helper package manually, you know.
Okay.
But that seems
Distrobox is a lovely way of doing little light containers and doing whatever you want with them.
But yeah. So I think I'd prefer that over Flatpak. Is it possible to do Flatpaks within a DistroBox container, or is that going a bit weird?
I imagine that would work, and that would be fucking weird.
Why would you want to use something like Flatpak? Oh, Jesus.
Well, that's the thing. I can container it in a nice. if something's only realistically available on Flatpak, rather than installing Flatpak on my.
No. Wait a minute. No. Nothing is only available on Flatpak unless it's not open source.
But my fuck, am I installing some random ass thing from source if I just want to give it a go or something? Like. Containerizing Flatpak. If I just want to try something that someone's just thrown out there,
no, absolutely.
Maybe because you can do—is it amnesic containers with DistroBox?
Yeah.
So you can just throw up a container that disappears when you close Distrobot. And then you can do flat pack, yada, yada, yada. And then...
Oof, anywho, The Expanse.
Oh, The Expanse, okay.
Yeah. Wait, also,
I very like much...
Naked Amos.
That's nice.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, actually, with Amos, he completely explains why this series of The Expanse is not doing so well.
What's that?
Because he's not with Holden.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I've got to get back to my crew.
Yeah, I got to get
back to my crew. You're
very funny. I was thinking while watching this, because this next few episodes, including this one, I really enjoy it. I love this episode.
You're very fuzzy.
I'm very fuzzy.
You look like you're in a low-res 1990s webcam.
He's not for me, but you are, Hamish, which makes me think maybe it's your connection.
Network then, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Hang on. Now you're both green for me at the moment. Everybody's green.
I'm green. Yeah, we're all green. I can try this. Let me look. I try to put the camera off and on.
Yeah, a little bit better. A little bit better. For me, yeah.
But yeah, I very much enjoy this episode, but I think I enjoy it because it's like a post-apocalyptic TV show right now.
Yeah.
Rather than enjoying it for the things
I was going to say that's the good feel of this episode or this couple of episodes. Yeah. Is Earth is like fucked up even more than even more than the poor parts of Earth are fucked up normally.
I like the character stuff between Amos and Clarissa.
Yeah, it is good.
Yeah, Clarissa's Clarissa
reusing her mods is like really fucking freaky. That was really well done. Even Amos is like fuck, and like covered in blood as well. You know,
it's almost like a sci-fi version of a werewolf or something.
Yeah, it kind of.
Yeah,
is,
no,
yeah.
I was. That's the feel. Werewolf or vampire or something. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Chris has got red for me again.
I did have something to say about a little exchange that they have. Because he brings up that idea
it's
of...
It's not laminated, is it?
they talk about being a good person again, and Amos reiterates that point that like how does it say? There are ways you can live a good life without being a good person.
Yeah, and she likes that, yeah.
And I think that interestingly sort of aligns with, generally speaking, Protestantism versus Catholicism. In that, in Catholicism, whether you're a good person or not is defined by your acts. Whereas generally in Protestantism, you are or are not a good person, and it's demonstrated through your faith. The problem with the Catholic view, the good acts thing, is it obviously rich people can do more good acts than poor people. Which is exactly the trouble they got into in the cause of the Reformation, arguably.
but you can look at that circumstantially, though, right?
How do you mean?
I mean, rich people can do more good acts, but they can also do more bad acts, right? Like,
It's
whether you're a good person defined by the good acts that you do or the bad acts that you do. Or some combination of the two.
Yeah, well, the bad acts you can in Catholicism, you can, you know, as long as you actually repent, you're good.
Yeah. I was about to say there is, of course, a confession in Catholicism.
Whereas in Protestantism, it varies. Protestantism is quite varied, but generally speaking, your good acts are kind of irrelevant. Irrelevant's going too far, but it's about faith. And I mean, in Calvinism, that's predeterministic. So you are born either a good or bad person, and you are going to either heaven or hell, and there's nothing you can do about it. It's all predetermined.
What's that religion that...
So why bother doing anything then?
The reason I bring this up is because when watching that, it always troubles me a little bit. And I think the way I see it, like if you do good things, you are a good person. Your good or badness is defined by what you do. So
I would call Amos a good person.
Amos is a good person, exactly. Yeah. And Clarissa is now, they've done bad things in the past, but now they are both trying and somewhat succeeding to be good people. They're good people. I take a Catholic view, I guess.
Yeah. I think there's also the sort of gray area of whether or not Amos would have attacked this guy
Which is interesting, you know, yeah.
Obviously never came up because the guy turned out to be a dick and was going to kill Amos. So
Yeah, but Amos was lying from the get-go, which is a bit...
Do you think he was? Because I don't read it that way, which makes the ending bit feel a little bit forced. Because he did. I think Amos, if the dude had been peaceful and just willing to trade, I think Amos would... But he's lying about the water filter thing,
isn't
he?
That's the thing, yeah.
Yeah, that's right, the end, that doesn't quite match up,
I mean, I think what's actually going on is Amos knows that that dude isn't going to be peaceful.
I think he knows that, yeah.
So technically, it's like...
That's a little bit.
That's teleological reasoning, that is.
On my part or on Amos's?
Oh, no, on your part. That's like post hoc, ends justifying the means, right?
No. I think Amos, like, because the dude's like a libertarian, whatever, whack job. Amos knows that just from the situation.
Context,
So it's like when I was younger, provoking fights by just going up to somebody who I knew would punch me and then fighting back and going self defense. You know, it's that kind of situation, I think.
No, because just because someone lives in a cabin in the woods and doesn't want anyone to come near them doesn't necessarily automatically, like, I mean, you can't make that judgment.
There's blood, like, you see dead people who've tried to climb the fence. The fella they meet before basically tells him, take a wide berth here. You know, I think he's got enough. And he says, like, I lived like this. I think he can read a situation like that and know that, you know.
Yeah, maybe. Well, I don't know.
I'm not 100%. This is just me.
I don't know.
You know.
Yeah. At best,
well, that's what I'm saying. That's why I say there's a grey area in the whole thing.
Yeah.
And we've only got how it turned out to go, and we don't know what was Amos's next move going to be once he was stood there naked. And
I do wonder that. Yeah. when Clarissa basically says this to him, says what Chris is saying, Amos agrees. So. I guess Chris's view, I think, I guess, is right. Ultimately.
But then again, I mean, like, as a, you know, like, as a relatively non-spiritual atheist, like, I don't like the concept of good and bad are only sort of like descriptors from our own personal framework.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. Going back to earlier, I don't think good and bad isn't anything to do with fucking gods and spirits and superstition. It's to do with how you act. Ultimately,
yeah.
But then, if there's no ultimate authority, how is anything objectively good or bad? Or do you not believe in objective good or bad?
Well, I don't think it's an objective good or bad. Like, let's just say I go out and kill someone, but that someone turns out to be a paedophile. There'd be a lot of people that say, "Oh, well, fine," you know. But there'd be some people that say, human rights.
But that, if you reduce that, you get Marquis de Sade, right? Where he's like, "We're liberals. God is dead. There's no moral authority. Therefore, it's morally okay for me to do anything which brings me pleasure."
No, but your own, well, to some extent, but that you know, I suppose where I would draw that, or draw like, I suppose my line is, if you're not hurting anybody else, then.
But why? But again, to extend, if there's no objective morality, why is it?
Why does
okay
it have to be? Why
else?
Does it have to be an external rule to tell you not to be a dick? Basically,
no. But,
that's
why,
my,
but
that,
why?
That would be
but
my
why,
question.
No. But in a subjective moral framework, why isn't it okay to hurt somebody else?
Because you know what it feels like to be hurt, and you know that's a bad thing. So why would you do it to somebody else?
I don't think that holds. When you say you know it's a bad thing.
Well, you know it's bad for you, so why would you do it to somebody else?
Murdering somebody gives me more pleasure. If it's a painless murder and it brings me a great deal of pleasure, then that's a net.
No, it's good. Not. You're hurting other people as well. You're hurting everybody that person knows. You're hurting everybody that person knows.
Or kill them
by
as
removing
well.
Them. Well, you're going to have to kill a lot of people then.
Yeah.
But I think this is the problem.
This is the thing about...
Yeah, but no,
like,
yeah,
hurting people... Anybody that harms other people or takes their life or whatever, all that goes way beyond the simplistic view that the law and, you know, the media have about things.
I don't think without an objective to refer to, I don't think you can say harm is bad.
Hang on a minute.
But the object is yourself. The objectiveness.
Yeah, so, hang on.
Do you like being punched on the nose?
There's times when I have.
Yeah, no. Well, I think there's a. Well, anyway,
It's a social contract to be walking down the road and not be expecting to be punched in the nose. That's what I'm, I guess that's what I'm getting at.
There's a few things that are all lumped into this.
There's more threads to this than just one thing.
Like morality is just more of a metaphor, really, because oh my god. Okay, I'm going to try and keep hold of this thread, but like, the things that are agreed upon aren't necessarily objective. It's just that we all like vaguely agree, right? So it's like, I think if you took a survey of people, say in the UK, most people would say it's best if we have a rule that says we don't punch each other in the face. I will do my duty to not punch other people in the face in exchange for other people not punching me in the face.
Yeah. I accept that. So it's like social contract, basically. We have a social contract that
a
certain.
Yeah, so that's a different thing from morality, then.
But that is malleable. You could see a society where.
And that's what Amos talks about, where he says that in times of crisis, the tribes get smaller.
Well, no.
But if we follow the Marquis de Sade's, you know, it could or could not be satire, but if we follow that logic of without an external morality, anything I do for pleasure is fine. You could imagine a society that is organized like that. You're allowed to do whatever you want.
How could it continue to be organized like that? Because nobody else, you'd have to all agree on what was acceptable still. If you just went around doing what you wanted, eventually it would just break into fights.
The Nazis, here we go, Godwin, right?
There we go.
They were the legal authority. They determined the social contract at that time.
We had a chat about this the other day.
It's okay to murder Jews, unionists.
Yeah, it was legal.
It wasn't right. It was still wrong.
But it was kind of, if
you're going towards social contract, you're making a legalistic argument. And I I see the sense in it for sure.
Incidentally, from that conversation that we had change, the other day,
that social contract can change to something quite monstrous.
True, that's true, yeah.
And has been monstrous things.
Well, it has happened in America. People are disappearing, literally being disappeared.
Slavery, feudalism, they're all...
But then at the same time, like, me as a vegan are at odds with the world. Do I thus think that everyone in the world is a bad person because they're not doing something...
I think you'd be perfectly... You'd be perfectly fair to say that I'm doing some evil by eating meat, and I agree that I am. Like, I agree that that is morally abhorrent, honestly, and I should be vilified.
But does that matter? Does that matter?
Yeah, I think it does matter. Yeah.
Again, this is because it's inside your own head. I think that's where the...
It would be...
Incidentally, kind of before I forget, from that conversation the other day, the one thing I've taken away from that is I would never trust Ghosty if I was hiding in his attic.
I think Ghosty has a little bit too much respect for the law, doesn't he?
I don't know if he. I think that was more of a misunderstanding. Ghosty. I think one was arguing from one point of view and the other. In fact, I spoke to Ghosty afterwards, and he was like, "Yeah, I sort of made a mistake there. He was talking about moral things rather than legal things."
But I mean, I know I'm just reiterating subjective morality, but isn't our own moral code what morality is, right?
I mean, that's what you're saying. Our collective moral code adds up to a social contract, but I think without that, for me, doing harm is a moral absolute. Is absolutely morally wrong under any circumstances. Even self-defense, even when you're defending yourself, it's the right thing to do. It's the pragmatically correct thing to do, but you're still doing something morally bad. And I think as soon as you take that away, I think you can. I mean,
then you start justifying
anything.
But then is something
this
bad
all ties in quite well to the Expanse, actually.
It ties into the whole Marco philosophy.
Yeah,
but does it matter if something's bad if there are no consequences to it?
Yes, it still matters.
How do you mean?
What do I mean?
If you do something nobody else is there to catch you.
Right, for example, is it still wrong if you get... I don't know.
I'll respond by saying, like, in a lot of religions, certainly in Catholicism, it's certainly in like Buddhism, for example, Hinduism. Mm-hmm. doing something morally wrong doesn't just harm somebody else, it harms you. The doing of it harms you.
I think that's fair to say. Most people do have a conscience about things.
I adhere to that as well.
What about people who do morally wrong things unknowingly? So what if you, for example, teach a child that something is, you know...
I mean, that's mens rea, basically, which is defined, yeah, this is legal rather than religious. But yeah, I think actually this is in Catholicism as well. Yeah, you've got to be guilty in mind.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
So guilty in mind? It's because, like...
Like, so if a toddler goes into the Oval Office and starts pressing a bunch of buttons and ends up nuking Panama... that wouldn't be morally wrong.
But the morality would be on who let the kid in the Oval Office. And also, like...
Well, it's toddlers but again, that are in there at the moment.
They wouldn't be guilty minds.
What if a terrorist let a baby into the Oval Office to morally absolve himself?
Well, it's
then the terrorist...
But that's what the terrorist is morally wrong. That's kind of what's happening at the moment, though, is that...
Yeah. Well, the electorate, then, is the ultimately bears the moral responsibility, though.
Yeah. As they may have done in 30s Germany, right?
Yeah, you've certainly got it. Yeah, you could, for sure.
Yeah, there's very little difference between 1930s Germany and the current regime.
One huge difference between 1930s and Germany.
We had that as a lesson to learn from, and we didn't take it.
No. Back in the 30s, we had an organized left, so there was some fucking hope.
Ah, right, yeah, that's true.
Mm. And better cars.
Do you like 30s cars?
Oh, Volkswagens are you talking about?
Well, would you rather drive the old VW Bug or would you rather drive the Cybertruck?
I wouldn't drive either of them. I wouldn't buy a Volkswagen for the very reason that they exist. You know,
I agree that fascist design cars were better in the 30s, definitely.
Hugo Boss made some great uniforms, you know, but I wouldn't buy their clothes.
Yeah, now it's just fucking red baseball caps, isn't it? At least Hugo Boss
It is the Americanization of fascism, isn't it? It's like, at least it was stylish when Europeans were doing it.
Oh, Jesus.
And they had trains to actually run on time.
Holocaust aside.
Yeah, but where were the trains going? Is
Yeah, that's a bit of a problem, yeah. I had a bit of a discussion with this about talking to Alan, my stepdad, worked for IBM. And he was saying, you must be against loads of companies. And I said, yeah, well, IBM, who you work for. And he says, oh, what's that? I says, you don't know this, that they set up the system that allowed them to catalogue the Holocaust.
Yeah.
And he goes, oh. And then he started doing that thing that people try to do, which is like, well, you know, it doesn't mean they agreed with the morals if they gave them a tool to do something. It's like, no. This isn't like selling a computer off a shelf here. This is a company that went knowing exactly what this was going to be used for, you know.
And the one that gets me, it's less macabre than that, but the one that gets me is, everybody knows it, Coca-Cola didn't want to sully their brand by selling Coca-Cola in Nazi Germany, so they invented Fanta as the drink that they would sell in Nazi Germany. That's capitalism, essentially.
That's capitalism. And that's what would be my sort of like excuse for working for a company like IBM is... Yeah, but every company would be an IBM if they basically...
Yeah, no, absolutely. I don't think that is a reason.
Anyone that survived would be. Yeah, you're right there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing is
there's a thing at the moment where I saw an article. I didn't read the whole thing, but you know, internet these days, you just look at the. I shouldn't, but the point is that the gist of it is that companies, big companies, are paying the minimum advertising fee they can on X on Twitter. To stay in the good books of the regime.
So it's not that they're not
boycotting it, and they're not making waves either. It's like fucking hell. That's collaboration, guys. That's exactly what it is.
I don't really to extend on what Chris was saying. I don't really blame the companies for that. They're set up such that that's the only decision they can make. It's
well,
the problem,
I mean, the
el problema es capitalismo, not the companies.
Yeah. No, however, also, there is a difference between somebody like IBM who came from outside. Going into that, now IBM would have survived doing other stuff. They didn't have to go into a foreign country and get involved in a shady thing like that.
Yeah, they were like, oh, this helicopter, yeah, make some money. Yeah, no, totally right there.
But and also, they were obviously like, telling themselves that this was not, you know, they were obviously telling themselves, oh, people aren't actually dying, it's just an organizational, you know, they were lying to themselves.
Not even necessarily that. Second to second,
you know.
Companies ultimately are amoral.
Mm. Yeah, because it's not like a lot of the time it's not one person making a decision to do this. You know, it's a process, a very, you know, alienated clinical process. Mm. But also, like,
which is a deliberate feature.
A deliberate feature. But also, one of the things I feel that does a little bit of PR work for capitalism is the small business fetishization. I think that a lot of people, whenever they want to raise minimum wage, they go, oh, but think of the small businesses.
Mm. When I had a small business, I couldn't have afforded more than I was paying.
I mean, same on the other end as well, whenever they do a tax break.
I would have wanted to. Yeah, whenever there's a tax break, it never happens at small business end. It happens at.
Well, no, they always talk about small businesses. We're trying to help small businesses. Mm. But of course, it doesn't go to small businesses.
It never works. No. Mm-hmm. I never. When the Tories were in power in the coalition years, well, for one thing, I had a dartboard in the back of the shop with George Osborne's picture on it. Yeah, everything they were banging on about for business, none of it helped my business. That was the bullshit they all came out with.
That's why I side with the leftists who believe that the petty bourgeois are a potentially revolutionary class, because if you can educate them as to that, then they'll be on board.
Yeah. Wait a minute, are you calling me petty bourgeois?
Well, you're in business, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean,
petty, maybe. I don't know what bourgeois is.
But, a small business on its own is not, like, particularly virtuous, though, is it, right? There are plenty of small businesses that cut their corners and treat their staff like shit.
Because they're forced to because of the system. Like, that's the system. I'd be in favour of, like, small businesses under socialism. I'm not anti people owning.
I'm not against people. It's just that it shouldn't be. I think it should be either nationalised or ran by local people.
Hmm. Run it as a co-op.
Yeah,
yeah.
It shouldn't be.
Should there be a limit to the size of businesses?
Yeah.
Yeah, probably. Like I'd go with that. Yeah.
No, that's basically what China does.
Hmm. Yeah, I keep thinking it's like once a business reaches a certain size and operates sustainably, it's only to the detriment of the economy that it grows.
Yep. Mm. Yep. Exactly. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Things once they get to a certain point. I mean, if you have a business, you're either making something, offering a service. Well, that's pretty much it, isn't it?
Or sitting on something.
Pardon?
Well, I mean, there is
economies, something, renting something out.
That's not a business. That's a scam. That's draining. That's draining.
A scam counts as a business.
No, it doesn't. That's the point. We're trying to avoid
there is
that.
There is economies of scale, but there's a company called Mondragoran in Spain, which was set up by a Franciscan friar, and it is it's one of the largest companies in the world, and it's a cooperative. You can argue about how cooperative it is, but it's essentially a cooperative. They have a pay ratio rules. It's worker owned, stuff like that. It's a massive company, but what it really is a collection of lots of little companies, and you get the economies of scale by putting them all under one umbrella. So
co-ops work generally, isn't it?
yeah.
How is that different from a franchise?
Because a franchise is licensed.
Yeah.
Globalism, basically.
Yeah.
Because with McDonald's that operates as a franchisee in like Subway, is the shops are owned by usually like a finance group or sometimes like a small business owner, and they'll buy the land, then get the planning permission, then do all the bits to get the McDonald's up and running. And I think your average McDonald's makes something like 1.2 million a year, so it's like if you can do it, like the money comes back to you, but. So most McDonald's are owned usually by like finance.
It's not going to be a small local business who's doing a food service.
Yeah.
It's
not worker owned.
No, it's not even worker centric.
No, but I do sometimes question that. Is it possible? Like, if the workers get together and have enough money, can they then buy a McDonald's franchise?
No, I guess
in theory, but whether the company
would allow that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What I was about to say, whether the corporations would allow that. They'd be going, this isn't right.
Well, if it's making McDonald's money, are they going to care?
Yeah, no, because it's like things image. Like UBI. Like they don't like UBI. We've talked about this many times, but UBI would be good for capitalists.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
They don't want to go down that path. As soon as you have got a worker owned McDonald's. That's, you know, people are going to see that works well. They don't want to, socialism.
Also and also those people would have power because they'd have a group of people working together.
I would love to know if that. It's at least been tried.
Not that much.
Or if there's something in the.
Maybe there is.
I don't know. Well, if feedback at.
Kofi dot whatever Hamish, and if we get enough money, we'll do a worker owned McDonald's.
Or Burger King.
After we've traveled the way in an RV.
Burger King.
No, fuck you. Burger King are minor Nazis. McDonald's are major Nazis.
McDonald's are awful, but the food.
Nah, they're all Nazis. It's not. It's so horrible. Good. It's they fucking also, nothing. It's
not great vegan. No, I like the McPlant.
Have you tried the Burger King vegan stuff?
Yes, and that's all good right. too.
Right, the problem with Burger know, the problem with Burger King. Is first of all they put too much salad on the burgers, and secondly, everything tastes of bacon. That's the problem with Burger King. Everything tastes mildly of bacon. Well, it doesn't taste of bacon. It tastes of bacon flavor crisps. You get a burger, you bite into it, and you taste bacon flavor crisps. McDonald's, it's nothing. It's foam, but it's fucking delicious.
Anywho, this is not getting us onto the expand, and we are we are on a clock.
They both
today.
Win for me.
Why I have the McDonald's logo behind me.
Also, it's the Impossible Whopper. That's what you want to get. The Vegan Royale is a bit mid, but it's okay. You know, but
we shouldn't be eating any of that shit. Let's be honest.
No, but it is delicious. So,
and relatively cheap.
More often than yeah. Well, that's it though. It's cheap for a reason. Yeah. It's like the chlorinated chicken that Farage wants everybody except him, I'm sure, to eat over here. You know, I'm sure he won't be tucking into chlorinated fucking chicken.
I can't stand this Burger King shilling. I'm going to go piss it
I've
out.
I've stopped shilling. So, so we've discussed that. I suppose the big story point is or the big character point particularly is Amos and Clarissa.
And Clarissa. So I'm hoping that at some point soon, Clarissa and Amos are going to get back onto the Ross and Ante. Because I like think about Clarissa, she doesn't really have like a point at the moment, right? She doesn't have a goal, an ambition, a thing that she needs to do. She's a bit lost as a character, isn't she?
Well, I think that's kind of the part of it, part of the discussion they have in the show about her family, because they talk about her grandfather, then her father, and the fact that her father just didn't, you know, once she was in jail, he didn't communicate, which is ironic since he was in jail.
Yeah. Honestly, I would have thought.
Sorry,
I would have thought that Jules Pierre Mao would have respected that. To be honest,
a bit, but he just treated her like shit the whole time, though, didn't he? Just the entire time.
Yeah, he must have wrote her off from the beginning or something.
Excuse me, sorry.
Yeah. Well, I think Hamish's cough has come back.
Yeah, it won't go away. Really. Keeps coming.
Is it? Yeah. Sometimes it just like the tail end of it just lasts forever.
Yeah.
Like the lingering cough. Yeah. Horrible.
So I want to know what Clarissa's like. Like, obviously they've brought her back into the show for a reason. She's going to do something, but I see no apparent.
Not necessarily. This show does bring characters back who just they're there for a bit. They. You know, work with, and then they meander off again. It's not necessarily building to anything particular.
Yeah, but it feels like this that she's a proper character. Like she feels like a character in the show.
I like her. Prax. I like her a lot. Even Prax. He sort of was there for a bit, and then he
fulfilled his character arc.
Yeah.
Like he had a point. Clarissa doesn't seem to have a point right now.
I think Clarissa's... and this is not me being teleological. I genuinely can't really remember what happens in the rest of the show, honestly. But I think her character arc is just redemption, I think.
I think that's the point of it, yeah.
Okay, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Redemption for... Who did she kill?
Well, that engineer fella was the really sad one.
That was the one that really...
Yeah, she caved his head in, which was not nice.
And then crushed his body into a panel on the wall.
Yeah, and then she blew up. She blew up. I can't remember which side, but she blew up somebody's ship, didn't she? And then framed Holden for it.
Yeah.
We still don't work out what, like, how she did the fabricated video.
Seems like technology we've got now. Never mind back then. Yeah, in the future,
it is. But then, why on earth?
You have like seven fingers.
Yeah, but yeah, exactly. It's like holding with two noses or something. But like,
my dog's got no nose.
How does he smell?
How does he taste?
Yeah, I guess so. But like, I always found it a weird point of contention that they wouldn't have even queried that video was doctored.
In a world where you have the technology to create, and there are other places where they do go, we've got to check this, isn't
it? Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, it seems like for story reasons, they're quite happy with to that one, accept just like, it. Yeah.
I mean, I guess the argument you could make is it was time pressured.
Yeah, everything
like
happens
it was like,
all at
if
once,
we don't do something in the next 30 seconds, we're fucked. So it's like, yeah, you just go on what you've got. Yeah. But yeah, I agree. That's a little bit of a wobbly point.
Yeah. So, yeah, especially. I'm looking forward to seeing what becomes of her because I reckon she'll be around for the rest of, for a large part of the series. I reckon so. That's my sort of.
Chris theory.
Chris theory. Also, wandering through the fucking ice in like just a flag, I can't imagine being that fucking cold.
Yeah,
they've just got UN.
They've just got normal clothes, normal indoor clothes, and then a UN flag draped.
Actually, you know what? Yeah, the missing point about whether or not what they did was a good thing or a bad thing was how cold they were. We don't feel how cold they were.
but it was
the middle of the night, and they were wearing a T-shirt and a flag.
Oh, and then Amos ends up in his birthday suit.
Yeah. And it's like, you know what? If someone's okay, so here's the other moral conundrum, right?
Yeah, why didn't the guy help them? Is another.
Yeah, yeah. Did he have a moral obligation or duty to help someone that was clearly going to die without his?
The dude in the shed.
Yeah,
yeah, the shed.
Oh yeah, yeah. I would. This comes back to a conversation from a while back. Like, it's the zombie apocalypse. Somebody's slowing you down. You know,
in an actual apocalypse, my morals probably change quite drastically.
Do you leave them behind, or do you?
That's the thing. Like, morals do change under the circumstances, and that's also why objective morality can be kind of difficult.
Yeah, you've got a point. Because it's like, you're making me think Drew thoughts now. God,
For example, a zombie apocalypse, would I really be that bad if I started eating meat again if it's the only thing I could find?
It depends which one of us
you were going to eat.
this goes back to what I was saying before. Like, for me, so leaving somebody behind in a zombie apocalypse, you know, to increase the chances of the rest surviving is morally, I couldn't do it, which is why I'd be a bad leader in a zombie apocalypse. Like, I think the right choice for the survival of the group and pragmatic reasons is to leave that person behind, but I still think that's morally abhorrent. I think it's the correct thing to do in this. It's like self-defense, you know, same as self-defense. Is it? I mean, that is a self-defensive act, effectively. Yeah. I think self-defense, punch, you know, fighting somebody off aside with the Buddhist here, that's still morally wrong, but the correct thing to do under the circumstances. I think something can be...
Yeah, but then a preemptive strike's abhorrent then, if it's self-defense.
Yeah, still.
Like in the prison yard, right?
You're obsessed with prison at the moment, aren't you?
you know that to survive in prison, what you got to do is you got to go up to someone and just beat the shit out of them, right? Because then,
I don't know if that's true for real prison.
Yeah,
but
you're going to leave
prison.
Chris's first day in prison, he ends up in solitary for beating the shit out of some poor bugger, you know?
He's like, why did you successfully just wanted to play some D&D?
Or if you knew someone was going to attack you, you attack them first.
Yeah.
So you knew that the skinheads, the white supremacists, were like, they're going to shank you in the shower. Yeah. So what you're going to do is you're going to jump them individually before they give you a chance to surround you in the shower.
I'll be very quick, but you just reminded me of the bit in Arrested Development where one of the characters is in prison. They're all white. One of the prison characters is in prison. He gets shanked by a white nationalist. And as he goes down, he just goes, but I'm white.
That's it. Yeah. Like,
I mean, I make a distinction, and it's an uncomfortable one, but morally wrong, but pragmatically the correct thing to do in the circumstances.
Yeah, and also the thing is because times are like that's why I don't really believe in morals, is because it's like morals don't really matter if they're easy to keep, right?
Well, no. Okay, so this is how it would work for me. Pretend that I'm a practicing Catholic, right? We're in the zombie apocalypse situation. I'm the leader. If we don't leave this person behind, we're all going to get eaten, right? So I leave that person behind and we carry on. And then I go to confession and I say, forgive me, Father, for I have sinned. I abandoned my friend. You know, I left somebody to die, blah, blah, blah. Please forgive me. That's morally wrong.
Why would you be a practicing Catholic in a zombie apocalypse? Because then you would say, well, Jesus was a zombie. It's none of this is making sense. I'm sorry, Drew. You're just talking utter nonsense.
But you ask forgiveness for the sin, but you did the pragmatically correct thing in the situation. I don't think those are... They're kind of at odds, but I think you can hold both of those in your head at the same time.
Especially if you're brought up Catholic, definitely.
But, like, I don't know if I even, like... I mean, but forgiveness from whom?
Doesn't matter. I mean, God in Catholicism, but that's not really the point. The point is that asking forgiveness does good for you.
Yeah, clearing your own conscience kind of thing.
The thing, what's his name actually was saying on Navarra, the dude, Bastali, he's converted to Catholicism, and he was saying he just, since he's become
bizarre
Catholic.
Bizarre thing to do. But...
A lot of leftists are. Since he's become Catholic,
Catholicism's really right-wing.
When somebody, it can be, there's very left-wing Catholics. Like the ones who sabotaged that pipeline, they're Catholics. They went to prison for it. There's right and left within Catholic. Anyway, he was just saying, and I think I agree with this. Like, just the act, if somebody's wronged you, just in just normal day to day life, somebody's been a prick. Rather than hold a grudge, just in your head, forgive them. It's better for you. It makes you feel better. It's better for the society. It just is a similar thing.
Okay. I mean, I'm not one to hold grudges too much.
But not like... under any circumstance. If somebody's murdered your family, obviously a lot harder, and still probably long term the best thing to do for you. But like, I'm not saying it's easy, but there's definitely a positive outcome in asking for forgiveness and giving forgiveness.
Well, I mean, yeah, but that's
as opposed to what I think a liberal would say is, well, it wasn't wrong. Acknowledge the wrong and move on, basically.
I mean, I get
the difference there. Yeah.
We've all done wrong.
What
things.
How do you think Amos is on that front then? Because if we're going to tie this into something that we're actually talking about, Amos versus that guy, and the way things turned out, do you think that's kind of how he
it's pragmatically
how he sleeps at night? Yeah, the pragmatic
but morally
choice.
Wrong.
Yeah.
But also, like, if we think about it in the billionaire's context, right? The guy's hoarding and
killing
huge
numbers of other people.
Like, if the alternative was to die out in the cold.
So if you bring Marx into it,
but billionaires aren't going to die out in the cold. They can give away almost everything and still be.
No, he's making an analogy.
So Amos, an is poor, between, Amos yeah, and Clarissa are the poor people.
Oh, I see. I think that's far too simple. That's nothing.
I don't know.
That's nothing like billionaires hoarding.
But yeah, then really, if you say that was self-defensive, which you're acknowledging, still perhaps a morally wrong thing to do, but pragmatically, I think you're just ending up at the same part. The same. You're ending up with objective morality at that point. I think.
No.
If you're acknowledging that it was a dodgy thing to do, but under the circumstances it was justifiable,
but that's only my belief system. That's like I don't expect that. That's
it
not
just
Amos's...
happens to align with God's. What a coincidence! Checkmate,
atheists.
I guess it's the case of do something bad or die. So if it's the case of do something bad or die, then does that make that deed good or less bad or more neutral?
It depends. It's because do something bad or die is like somebody's trying to murder you, self-defense. It's either them or you. They're attacking you, self-defense. That's still, I still think that harm that you did to that person is still morally wrong, but it was justifiable. Whereas hang on. If the situation is you're in a Nazi prison and they come in and say, shoot your best friend or we'll shoot you. Mm. I don't think shooting your best friend is both morally reprehensible and not justifiable, I think. Then you the right thing to do there in both senses is take the hit yourself.
I agree.
Whether any particular person, whether I'd have the guts to do that in that situation, I don't know. But
well, you know that it's going to be you next anyway.
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, this is kind of odd because technically it's the Nazi that killed your friend.
Yes.
But then again, if you're in a situation like that and somebody hands you a gun with a bullet in it, you take one of them first, then get shot anyway, because you're going to get killed anyway.
I mean, if you're going to get... Yeah, like...
But then more likely, the sort of evil of that sort of situation means they probably shoot your friend and make you watch rather than shoot you.
But if you're... I don't know. This is difficult, because it's like, if you're coerced into doing something wrong, does that offset some of the moral badness to the person who's doing the coercing?
Yeah, for sure. They're also doing something morally wrong, but I think are too. I don't think that excuses you for the act. Unless you're literally forced, you know, as in literally you have literally no control, no choice, then you're still, you bear some of the responsibility, I think.
I guess so, but at this point it seems redundant. Like, morality is no longer a thing that's in play. It's survival, I guess, or...
I mean, we should also point out that in survival situations, people tend to be, contrary to what's usually depicted on the screen, people tend to be very cooperative and think in terms of the good of the group and stuff. Like, so we're somewhat... Yeah.
Okay, so if someone does a terrorist attack, and this terrorist attack causes rioting for some reason, or not rioting, like looting and general...
unrest.
Breakdown of order and unrest, right? And that's done with the intention. So maybe it might be like bombing supply chains, starving people, and then
throwing rocks at a planet.
Yeah,
to bring it
that
back
kind
to,
of thing.
You know.
Yeah. Is that person trying to provoke riots responsible for the riots? Are the people rioting responsible?
Yeah, if that was their intent. Yeah, if that was their intent. Again, it comes back to men's right, right? I think I might be misusing that term, but. Guilty mind.
I don't see that.
Time's against us on the old Expanse thing.
Okay, all right. Okay, right.
I mean, this, like, just to wrap it up. Like,
some of this actually fits in quite nicely if we would just actually talk about Expanse as well, especially with Marco.
this is stuff that humans have been thinking about for thousands of years, and we've never got like a concrete answer that we could all agree to. It is, you know. Open,
feedback at the polar bear.
Yeah, got God if you want to.
God, we'll pass it on to God for you.
Yeah,
I've got to be.
If we work, does that make me Jesus? I'm Jesus. God, Jesus.
Yeah, you are.
You've got more
Jesus
hair. You're quite Jesus.
Oh, yeah,
white Father, Jesus. Yeah,
yeah. White. Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. There we go.
Oh, what is that? So he's the Holy Ghost, is he?
He's the Holy Ghost. Yeah.
Drew the spirit of something. Anyway, so what else have we got? We've got we've got a little bit of Avicerala.
Oh, Avicerala.
And you get your answer. You get your answer as to who's in charge.
Yeah,
I like this guy. But he is feeding into a trope that I really dislike, which is it's seeming to be, but I might be jumping the gun here. The best person for power is the person that doesn't want power. I really detest that sort of very simplistic maxim that people seem to throw around as if it were true.
It's one of those things where there's truth in it, for sure, but it's too simplistic to be a guiding rule or whatever.
Yeah. Like, would you hire someone for your business who didn't want the job because they do a good job?
I mean, maybe, though.
Depends what the job is.
Yeah, no, I get what you mean. I think Hamish and I shouldn't say anything in response to that.
Yeah, I'm not going to say too much about this either, yeah. But now, just because you were asking about it, who's in charge, and we get our answer.
So, I do like him.
What is it, Department of Transport or something?
I
think the counter to that, because it's definitely true, the people who are hungry for power generally are not good. I think that half of it is more true than the counterpoint that somebody who doesn't want
to. Yeah, I think you've got a point there.
Because partly, I think experts expertise is really fucking important. And if you're not,
and we don't have that in politics these days, that's
you're
a big
like, no,
problem.
We really don't. Yeah. We really don't. Yeah,
yeah, that's right. It that phrase is ask about face. Then it's not that it's not that the best people for power are the people that don't want it.
No,
it's just
no.
that people who shouldn't have power are the ones that want it the most.
Really
yep,
want
that's,
it. Yeah,
yeah that's. Yeah.
Also, I would say that's even that might not always be true.
Might not always be true, no.
Yeah, there might be some people who really want power are actually quite good at...
they might want to actually help people.
Yeah, if you...
What
if
a crazy
you have
idea for politicians to actually help. Well, there's a politician started... I mean, it's on change.org, which is questionable, but he did start a petition to get the government to talk about wealth tax instead of cuts. And he's a Labour politician, so it's kind of, whoa. A Labour politician acting like a Labour politician.
But yeah, I mean, so like Hamish was saying, somebody who wants, they really, really want the power in order to do good. So I think we boil down the phrase, so if they want power in the abstract, if they just want the power for power's sake. But then it's like when you're caveating, it's not a pissy fucking thing anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's the problem. Yeah, that's why Chris is right to go, well, this is simplistic and not very accurate.
Basically, it amounts to don't put a psycho in charge.
which we constantly do.
Yeah.
For some reason.
Yeah, but okay, so
or spineless shits like the one we've got.
No offense to any psychopaths watching. I know that psychopaths can lead, you know, perfectly good lives.
Yeah, I think so. But Secretary for Transport, Department of Transport guy, he seems like a nice guy with his heart in the right place. That was the impression. Mm-hmm.
That was the point, I think, though, isn't it? It's kind of, as you say, it's a sort of simplistic.
Yeah, and he got like through chaotic events, was bolstered well above his position, and
he asked Abisurala to be in his cabinet.
Yeah, which is, you know, which I would do, you know, to be honest.
Of course you would. You take the most experienced people that are still around. Honest,
I was waiting for this scene to happen in one way or another. Either someone to come in and it's like, we've checked the line of succession, turns out it's you, Abisurala, like, or she's in the cabinet, which I think is...
It's her
like,
best position anyway, isn't it?
It's her best position, right? She wasn't the best at being the general secretary.
Being the president man, she wasn't president man.
Yeah. Okay, she's unwilling to do the sort of social side of politics, you know, they're keeping everybody on side and schmoozing people. Like, she just wants to make the right decision and have people do it, which should work.
She would have been great in Gao's cabinet. Like, you know...
Gao and her having that... disagreement and spat and everything did probably make for not the best
if she being in Gao's government and, you know, a trusted advisor, then nobody would have been killed by the asteroid.
Probably not, no.
They would have turned the defense cannons on much earlier.
They would have done it, they would have listened to her more, but it was too they were too busy bitching at each other. sorry,
but
I didn't
also,
mean,
like,
not it, because they're women I said that, sorry, that was just a phrase, turn of phrase.
but also you know, there is also like it's this general sort of like constant butting of heads of the old guard and the new ideas. You know, sometimes like there is expertise and wisdom in the old, but at the same time you want new
things
ideas.
Things can be entrenched a little bit,
you know, and it's like it's all you know, it's about marrying those two together in a way that you get the best results, which is like, you know, another eternal question of time that we're not going to be answering on this podcast.
Sticking with the Abisurala thing, of course, there's the thing about her husband. Now, she does explicitly state that her daughter and her family are fine, but it's her husband that's gone missing. And she's very obviously crying and everything, you know, which is,
well,
you know,
some,
she doesn't
some,
often
something
show her
that,
emotions that way. She'll show her emotions in anger, pardon me, anger and stuff quite easily, but not her soft side, you know.
Well, but ultimately it doesn't matter, and I'm surprised, you know, because she's quite a smart person that she hasn't noticed that isn't actually her husband; it's an imposter.
Yeah, it's just some guy that turned up partway through a third series or something.
Especially because this imposter doesn't even seem to be that much like he seems to be a worse version of her husband.
Maybe a real husband is fine. Yeah,
husband number one. Yeah,
I
forgot
two.
His name now. Oh, bloody hell, is it Brian something?
Anjun.
No, Anjun.
Yeah. No, not Anjun. Hang on.
No, Anjun's somebody else.
Arjun.
Arjun.
No, I meant the actual actor who plays the original. He's in loads of stuff, the original husband.
Yeah. His name is Julian Bashir's dad.
Yeah, that's one of the things he does. Yeah. He's in Seinfeld as well.
Is he?
I just rewatched all of Seinfeld.
Don't blame him for that. Why would you do that to yourself?
Because I still like it. But, I mean, obviously I have to not think about what a fucking prick Seinfeld himself is.
All of them.
Hang on a minute. I hope I'm not showing my hand here, but isn't the guy husband number one, was he not a character on Big Bang Theory?
Probably.
He may well have been.
Yeah, like a minor character, like someone's parents or something.
Possibly, but I don't know. I've not seen enough of that.
I think is he also in Game of Thrones, or is Julian Bashir in Game of Thrones?
I don't think he's in Game of Thrones. Neither one. Julian Bashir's in Game of Thrones. Yeah, yeah.
Who's Julian Bashir?
He's the leader of the... Sorry, wait a minute, with the cross wires there. Do you know who Julian Bashir is, Chris?
No.
Oh, right. You've not seen Deep Space Nine?
No.
Oh, right. He's
Chris
the doctor.
Not Star Trek. He's not a Star Trek person.
No, all right, okay. Yeah. He's the doctor from Deep Space Nine. Mm. But he also plays the leader of the Martell.
What's the Southern Kingdom called?
Oh, yeah. Prince of Dawn.
Yeah. Sorry, yeah. Well, yeah, not...
yeah, but they look so different from Deep Space. He looks so different from Deep Space Nine.
Well, he's allowed to look more ethnic in that show. You know, Star Trek's all about spreading all the love and being all, you know, happy and inclusive and everything. But as long as you're, you know, as long as you're toned down a wee bit. You know.
There we go. I learned, I think.
So Absarala ends up there. What's the other? The Rocinante is saved by the last minute message from Naomi at the end of the last episode. So there's not much happens to the Rocinante. There's just basically sort of they found out what's wrong and they're fixing the ship and then getting ready to go again.
I've got another philosophical thing.
I was going to mention something, but that's okay.
It's something I keep thinking when I'm watching stuff. Like, because we root for the main characters, we root for the characters we've been following around because we understand where they're coming from, we understand their motivations. Like, and I like the dude in the woods, for example. Like, if the whole show had been from his perspective, we'd be rooting for him in his confrontation with Amos. You know what I mean? Yeah. And that's an uncomfortable thought for me. Same with, like, what's his face? Terrorist fella who's throwing rocks at Earth. Like, if the whole show had been from his perspective, we've seen his backstory, seen how he's mistreated by Earthers his whole life and, you know, beaten and all, you know, all these things. We'd be absolutely, I mean, I am a little bit anyway, but we'd be completely rooting for him. And that's, I think, in a way, kind of worrying. Like, somebody whose perspective we've seen will root for them versus somebody we know nothing about without acknowledging that we know nothing about them. Like, they could be fucking right in this situation. And that's...
He could be like the 50th person trying to kill them this day, you know?
Yeah. Maybe he's got a daughter. No, we don't. He doesn't have a daughter. But, you know, like the usual things that are used to make you sympathetic to a character doing bad things, like they're trying to protect somebody.
Well, he does claim to have a son, but it's a decoy, isn't it?
Yeah,
I saw that from the beginning.
Yeah, it's just pretty obvious. I think Amos did as well.
Yeah,
I get the feeling Amos was sharp enough to pick on that. What was I saying before we sidetracked it?
Because the thing is, those preppers do tend to be known as loners.
Incels.
It's like, you're an insult, mate. You ain't got a fucking son.
Oh, God.
You're a space virgin, mate.
Yeah. What was I saying before we got sidetracked? Talking about... At least which thread of the story was I even talking about? The Rocinante. Yeah, so... Now my brain's gone blank. Why was I talking about? Oh yeah, the only other thing that comes up in that bit in the Rocinante, apart from we've sorted out the problem with the ship, we're getting ready to go again, is the Monica. Pardon?
Mm.
I have something to say about that as well.
What, Monica or the ship getting fixed?
No, the ship getting fixed. So if you know that you've been hacked and they've inserted some code that's going to make the engine explode when you set off, I'd want to remove all that code. Be certain you've removed all that code. Then do an automated start.
Yes. Away from the
station.
Nobody
on the fucking ship. That half of the station evacuated just to check. that there's something, nothing you fucking missed. That drives me nuts.
I'm assuming they did that off camera, right?
Well, time-wise, maybe not. There doesn't seem to be much time. They seem to be in a hurry still, you know? Because they're still trying to catch up with the other ship. But anyway, Monica gets, you know, wheedles her way to get to stay on. I like her a lot. She also, like, you know, obviously, what's his name? I want to call him Hog, but it's not Hog. It's not Hog or Dog or what's it? Bull. So Bull, he's like, no fucking way. She's not staying. Yeah, but then, for once, Holden kind of shuts his mouth and stays out of it and lets Monica put her case across, which I thought was interesting because quite often he'll stick his oar in without...
I think he's more sympathetic to her now he's seen that she is actually trying to do good this time.
It's just that it's more that he always sticks his oar in, but why does he not this time? You know, there's a little bit, but there's a little bit of, you know, as you say, there's a little bit of respect there. But she does point out that she was one of the people that, you know, did the whole thing with the rings, and she was on that mission, so it's not... You know.
Yeah, that is a big deal, that she was like one of the first people through the ring and survived. Like, that's... Isn't she going to be like super famous at this point?
She's got to be, isn't she? She's got to be like the most famous reporter in the system, you know.
Yeah, yeah. She's got a scoop.
She has, yeah.
She's got the scoop.
The scoop.
But I love the ways in which, because she's a character you kind of like, but she's also very manipulative. But I sort of enjoy because she's good at it.
Yeah.
So you sort of respect it.
It's like a trick you know that she's going to do, but it's seeing it done well.
Exactly. Yeah.
Definitely. So I definitely enjoyed.
Yeah, so it's good that Monica's going with them. I think that's going to be interesting because, I mean, the thing is, we only have on the ship Holden. That's it. He's the only Rosinante crew member that's actually from
for
the
too long.
Yeah,
but as Chris has pointed out, Amos has said, "I need to get back to my crew." So
yeah.
At least that's on the cards.
We know it's happening. Yeah. If Amos is saying,
I'm enjoying this post-apocalyptic show, and it continues to be a post-apocalyptic show for a few episodes, and I very much like it. But I don't enjoy it for the same reasons I enjoy The Expanse.
I liked in The Last of Us that like one-off episode where they had the two gay guys who had their little compound.
That was very good.
I actually faded off that show. If it had been a whole bunch of anthologies, a little bit like that, I think I would have quite enjoyed it.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, very much.
But I just kind of faded off it because I don't know why. It just didn't grip me.
Did you get to the end?
No, I got to like episode 6 or something.
Because the end is actually a good example of the moral stuff we were talking about, but I don't want to reopen that.
I always figure I'd force myself through it, but I don't...
See, I don't know anything. I don't know the video game, so I just watched it for the sake of it.
I've not played the video. I found it watchable and entertaining, but bland. Like a lot of... It didn't leave me with anything, you know. It didn't leave me with any thoughts or impressions or, you know.
So the only other story thread in the episode is, of course, the screaming firehawk. Because I did wonder about that after they got the missiles off them, is how they were going to stop this ship that's pursuing them from doing anything else, you know.
Hand grenade is the answer.
Yeah, well, as we discovered. So, I mean, it's a bit of Alex action. You know, Alex gets to do a bit of action.
Couldn't they use hand grenades as, like, so they could go really fast towards the other ship, lean out the window, throw a hand grenade, and then veer off?
Theoretically, like you're not far wrong from the physics there. Yeah. Your physics aren't as atrocious as they often are, but but yeah, effectively they could use it as a projectile. But
a couple of lines in the show that I liked. I liked it when.
Well, are we not going to talk about how kick-ass and badass Bobby was in this bit as well? Come on.
I'll get
this
out of the
way. It's Bobby. She's in your logo.
But this season, she's hanging around with fucking Alex, for fuck's sake.
That is that.
Yeah, when Amos and...
It does give you a lot of negative cool points.
When Amos and... what's her name? Not Camilla.
Clarissa.
Clarissa are talking about parents.
Camilla Parker Bowles.
You missed this bit because we were talking about that when you were off doing one of your breaks.
When she says Schrodinger's parent, and Amos goes, who? I enjoyed that. I enjoyed the bit when she's talking about the moon. And he lets her finish, and then he goes,
There's just dust everywhere because of the explosions. Also, the thing that is quite interesting, she doesn't question why he doesn't have exposure to the, you know, the outdoor trips from school and everything.
Oh, the normal, yeah.
And it's quite interesting. Well, that, she was obviously she was
just had a he had a horrible childhood.
And, yeah, and she, yeah, but she had obviously she had a very rich upbringing. Well, I love how she's like, thing as well, you know.
Yeah, I love how she's like, everybody takes school trip out there, out to this forest. By the way, my daddy owns it.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, my granddad planted it or whatever, you know. Yeah. Or paid for it to be planted. He didn't obviously plant anything himself.
Well, you never know. Yeah. He could have used those mods.
Whipping around, planting trees.
I don't think they had those mods.
But yeah, Bobby doesn't feel like Bobby this season, honestly.
Yeah, she's not. Me,
which is why I'm not excited about.
She's
Bobby.
Just kind of superhero insert. Yeah, you know, holding on to the two ships together.
Bobby's the most fun when she's around Abbasarella.
Yeah, that's
they're very different together, personalities, yeah. But like managing to work together and appreciate each other and kind of I think have a respect and a love for each other. That I love that. I love the clash and I love the camaraderie there. Bobby with Alex is a far less entertaining dynamic.
Yeah, it's a bit.
Yeah, Alex doesn't. He has negative charisma. He sucks the charisma out of people. But then we'll make get another story about a gerbil or something, right?
What?
Rats.
Sorry, yeah. Terrible.
So,
any other? You said there was a few lines. What other lines did you like?
Oh, just those two: the Schrodinger thing and the sun thing. I enjoyed those.
Yeah, the sun thing's good. Yeah. So I'm pretty sure that's the sun.
Are we going to talk about Naomi?
Of course, there is another thread. Shit, sorry. Oh my god, that's very telling that all of us kind of went, yeah, that's the only other thread, and then went, oh, wait a minute, yeah.
That's actually the bit that made me think about if you saw stories from the other person's perspective thing, because you know the other black woman, the very attractive purple black woman, yeah, who's clearly very hostile to Naomi, and we don't really know why because we haven't seen her story. That's the one where I thought if we'd seen the show from her perspective, we'd be on her side right now and be like, yeah, fuck you.
Well, there's things I like about that. Like, I forgot her name, but you're right. She does say, next time you want her, you know, if you want Naomi spaced, ask me next time. You know, that's
me. Yeah, I like
that's
that.
That's very So we don't know what the beef is, and also, but the one slightly audiencey ooh thing is that obviously Kamina is right there and she doesn't know that Naomi's there. That's kind of it's a wee bit.
And
Philip, fucking Philip. I don't need to. I don't need to send a message to her because shut the fuck up, Philip.
My mummy is here. Oops.
he's you know it's but that's kids for you, isn't it? They do say
he's like 19 things. Or 20 or something.
I don't know if he's meant to be younger than he looks, to be honest.
Contrast, and I don't blame the actors. I don't blame the.
No problem with the actors at all. No,
the actor's great, but contrast Philip with who's the young kid that we meet earlier as
Diogo.
The thing. Diogo, yeah. Contrast Philip with Diogo just as. There's just something missing now in something. Like, Diogo, absolute prick, teenager, all this teenagery stuff going on, but you kind of loved him. Philip, I think the writing is worse.
What if Diogo was Naomi's secret son?
See, that would be so cool, because we know him already. We feel for him.
Is that a bit too...
Oh, no, yeah, but
Star
not necessarily
Star
Diogo
Trek,
himself,
everything has to be tied together, you know.
But at least we know him and we empathize with him and
would have been interesting, yeah. I give you that. There is, if I remember rightly, I think it's Philip that has quite a good, actually does have one decent story arc coming up. If it's either Philip or Diogo, one of the two of them. Now that you've got me thinking about it, maybe am I thinking of something that's already happened? I've forgotten. I can't remember because it's all to do with... I know it's to do with the war, so it must be this series.
Oh, is it the bit where Philip goes away for a bit and he discovers he's got a blackhead on his penis?
That's it. That's the one.
Yeah. Late to that.
No, there's a bit... I don't want to say it because I don't want to spoil things for Chris, but there is a bit... I might be mixing up something else with... I might be conflating a couple of things here, but there is...
Can you type me a hint? Because I've got no idea what you're...
Hang on, I'll see. Yeah, hang on. Where's Drew? See if I can get this right. See if I'm getting the right person. Is that maybe I'm thinking of something Diogo does or has already done and I'm forgetting it? I don't think so. I'm sure this is still to come.
I haven't seen Diogo in ages.
Yeah. I think it's Philip, though. I'm pretty sure. I think it's. Do you know what I mean, Drew?
No.
No?
I think it's just unfamiliarity with this season, maybe. I've only watched this season a time or two.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's Philip and it's this series, I'm sure.
Yeah. Okay. So, okay.
But yeah, there's one decent story out. But now I'm beginning to think, was that something that's happening with Diogo? But no, I think it's Philip. I think it's Philip. But that doesn't make it. That doesn't ring any bells with you at all.
No.
Oh wow. Right.
I mean, carry on talking, and I'll type something.
Yeah. No, I've nothing else to say really, other than I think there was something decent with Philip coming up, and that was why I didn't completely hate him right to the end of the show.
Yeah.
So what about Kamina and Kamina and Marco is a bit more interesting than just the Naomi and Marco stuff. I think it has to be said. No? Still not floating anybody's boat.
So it was interesting actually, this is a bit of their moral sort of conundrum where it's like, look, He's like the only shot.
No, Drew, not that.
Uniting. Okay. Yeah.
Go on, Chris. He's trying to like. When they were having that discussion, they were like, he's uniting the belt. We're either in or we're out. Mm-hmm. It's not the way we do it. But
I'll be right back. I've just got to take him for a pee. Sorry.
But we've got to bolster our collective forces, and it's not going to be the way that we want to do it. Yes, it's going to be bloody and awful. But if we don't do it, we die. You know, we survive fighting or we die morally good.
I do like that it's just a member of somebody on Kamina's ship who just says like why are you all pretending like we've got a choice? We either join or we die, basically.
And actually that swung me around. I'd be like, you know what, refrain from doing heinous shit. But
I mean, what country, this is, not 100% true, but what country didn't start off with, something that probably we wouldn't morally condone,
Like exactly.
Because everything is born in violence. So, yeah.
Power is almost defined by the violence, really, isn't it?
Yeah, again, this is not justifying it, but accepting the reality of that, like, okay, now we do have more political power. It was created in a way that we're not comfortable with, but let's, join this and see what good we can do. I don't know, maybe pushing it too far, but...
You've only got the choices in front of you, right? They're not all going to be ideal choices.
I take it we've spoken about the guy who takes over the speech and says, look, we're basically...
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
We don't really have as much choice as we're being presented, as is being presented.
Yeah. And, that guy actually, I think he swung me around.
Yeah, it makes sense. Like,
Even then, I keep coming back to this, but if maybe we see this is a legitimate rebellion, Haitian revolution. Thank you. The Haitian revolution or something like that. It's people who have been mistreated rising up and seizing power. It's going to be violent.
It's like there's loads of places like that, though, isn't there?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure they've tried asking nicely, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So
it's interesting. One thing I think is interesting in this as well, that Philip seems to have more of a plan than he did at first. But it's written in a way that makes you think, did they just think to add this stuff in to try and fill
it
out
a bit? He
mentions this thing about agriculture. And he talks about it'll be tough for a while, but we can do it. It's like he didn't really seem to have much political thinking in that direction before.
But the thing is, we're seeing the battle. We're seeing him during the battle. Like he might have had the plan, but during the American Revolutionary War, they weren't talking about what economic system until you've won the war. You might have that plan in mind, but I can buy that. I can buy that.
Well, the other thing, the other thing that really sort of, sorry, the dog's really trying to piss me off now. The other thing that kind of got me about that is I thought he was going to say, I mean, I know he didn't because I've seen the show before, but I felt, always felt like what he should have said there was, we've got the access to the rings for agriculture as well. It's like,
Because Earth is the only source of live soil. Surely some of those planets, which we know have life on them,
must have life. Also, soil,
that's going to be a big. Focus. That's going to take time.
Well,
but so is
if
the,
you've got
so
if you've got
the,
some
life.
But also, they were talking about how people in the planet who have settled on the planets of the ring, that their daughters and sons are not going to be belters.
Would
they just be creating the same thing but on the other side of them, behind them as well as in front?
And also, no mention of Prax. He's the guy that does it. They mentioned someone.
They
else.
Mentioned different scientist.
It'd be so cool if Prax was in this revolution. Prax and May. That'd be cool. Like, he's been sort of like made militant by proximity to Amos, and he's like, this is the way forward. That'd be kind of interesting. I'd like that.
Yeah.
I think it's obvious from what Drew said, that that's not going to happen. Sorry, Chris.
I mean, I don't think that seems like a likely. It should be, but if you've got live soil, can you not make more live soil once you've got live soil? Is that not how that works? I assume
you need more materials to.
But the bacteria would continue. Yeah, if we say
you've
got dead soil and live soil.
Yeah, you need to feed. You can put fresh topsoil in your garden.
And
get more out of it. But yeah, you still need to have. You need to have the right type of plants, and you need to have a cycle of things. Okay.
Yeah, but also, and I think this is what they were kind of doing with the ag dome. Is you can do stuff in synthetics. I'm sure they could find synthetic soils, because you can grow a lot. Okay, the food might not be great. You might be limited.
You mean like compost, just compost and stuff like
well,
that.
Well, I'm just thinking like when you're
compost
school,
manure
you grow...
are organic. You can make if you've got the right bacteria, you can make more of the right bacteria by feeding it.
Mustard cress and things like that in cotton wool.
Yeah, but that will only take you so far. Or if you try to recycle that into the same thing and just added water all the time, it wouldn't work. It would eventually. It would be a diminishing return.
Yeah, you need a whole.
Where for agriculture, you need a.
Continuous... And that's what Prax even does a little speech about that, doesn't he? About
I believe it does.
Of like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When that ecosystem is.
Shit, I thought I solved all of the problems by turning water into food.
You've got feces, you've got organic material, you can...
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying, that needs to be produced from somewhere, and if you have, say it's animals producing that, you then have to feed the animals.
Well, I'm thinking humans. You've got plenty of humans, you've got organic waste.
Well, have you seen The Martian? Have you not seen The Martian? The Martian?
Exactly. Yeah.
It's not terrible. It's not super bad science, let's put it that way.
Watching that film, I got the impression, I didn't particularly enjoy the film, but I got the impression that the book sounds really, like it's a good advert for the book.
The book is good, actually.
I watched the film and I thought the book is probably a lot better.
Yeah.
Right. Do we need to say something daft to end the episode?
Yes.
We're always saying something daft, though, so it's finding the right moment to say something daft and to stop saying it. Have we covered everything, though, in the actual show, in the episode of the show?
I think so, yeah.
Because I feel like I feel like there's more we could say about... Oh, maybe you guys were talking about when I was away with the dog, actually. Yeah, talking about the Kamina stuff.
A little bit.
I don't know if we were all on the same side of that, but the guy brought me over. He was like,
Yeah, that was cool. Well, the interesting thing though is what should have been the giveaway to anybody who was paying attention was that essentially purple lipstick woman comes on and says, "Well, you can go, but you'll be our enemy." Or you can stay and speak to Marco.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
That's different. That's different from what Marco says. Marco says you can go and go in peace. He's lying.
He's lying, but
100% sure. But like, yeah.
But yeah,
the point is
that it's just another thing that this guy says in his argument is or actually a few people say it. I think when they're talking before that big speech, is that the Earth and Mars people from the inners are not going to pay attention to which faction they're, you know, the ship's from or whatever. It's because belters equals bad guys, you know.
Yeah. Which kind of justifies Marcos's whole thing. Really.
Well, I mean, it's very 9/11, you know, the whole thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, to some extent, we get to see the other side of the coin a little bit. I mean, we do know they had it coming. Well, you know. Obviously, again, those 3,000 people shouldn't have been murdered, but
and I think the seeds were sown long before
any of that.
The only thing that is a problem with me thinking that way in relation to Marco is, like, he killed tens of millions of people, which is a step up.
Yeah, he could have made
need to kill tens of millions? Yeah.
Well, the thing is, though, is that he didn't know where those asteroids were going to land.
Oh, no, he knew roughly.
No,
they could just as easily have landed in the sea.
He had a rough path.
I don't think they were aimed, though. I think he knew after they launched them, they know where they might land, but he's not aiming at a particular place, I don't think.
I just got the impression that the calculation was just made to hit Earth.
I'm not sure how accurate you can be with an irregularly shaped, you know. Although that doesn't matter.
And also, I don't know.
You count everything as a point mass.
Yeah.
So
when I did astrophysics stuff, it was everything was just a point mass. It didn't matter if it was a planet, a sun, whatever. It was just a point mass.
Over that distance for any accuracy, though, you'd still need to very accurately know where the center of gravity is, which is a very hard.
That's why it's a point. That's why you count it as a point mass. Doesn't matter. You have a point mass, which is the center of gravity.
Okay.
Because confusion there. You look confused.
That's beyond me. But I'll take your word for it.
If you just imagine, it doesn't matter what shape or size something is. If you just think of it as a point with all the mass. Mm.
No, but the point mass has to be in the right place.
Yeah, but that's the point. Matters. You do your calculation based on the point mass, though.
No, I understand that.
Everything else.
The point mass. If you've got a very irregularly shaped thing, if the point mass isn't in the center of gravity, then you're going to be off.
No, but it is because you're treating it as a point mass. So
I understand that. But the point has to be in the right position.
No. It's not a point on the thing. That's not what I'm saying. A point mass is not a description of a point on an object. A point mass is a model of the entire object.
No, I understand that. So, okay. In that case, you need to know where the object is, which in real mass is where the center of gravity of the object is.
Yeah. There's some calculation, but it's not an accurate
calculation of the center of gravity of a very irregularly shaped.
Okay, you keep coming back to the same. I think there's a slight misunderstanding, but I'm not going to go on about it. Sorry, I'm choking to death now.
Okay, but anyway, the long short is how detailed, how closely would he have been able to have aimed things for?
See, I don't think very closely at all.
Yeah, my gut is just telling me no. He would have got it on somewhere on Earth.
Aim for Earth. But,
if you aim to get it into the gravity of Earth, I suppose. Yeah, that's what that's the if you get that close, you're doing a good job. Yeah. Well, an accurate job.
And he did need to, he needed to do something big enough to make Earth back off rather than retaliate. That's the important.
So isn't
thing.
That your maybe that was. Isn't that your tens of millions? Argument absolutely, being thrown away then, you know.
Yeah. No, that's kind of what I'm saying.
It could have been rocks that landed in less populated areas that would have demonstrated, hang on a minute, we could do this, that could have killed tens of millions of people.
But I think
the argument about the US showing the Japanese a test of the atomic bomb, then, you know.
Yeah.
Sort of.
But it's about emotionality versus rationality, I think. Like, if they killed very few people, you can then emotionally see how they could have retaliated rather than backing off.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, well. Yeah, because to politicians, it's just numbers.
Yeah.
Well, we're not stopping on that. Sorry, guys. We're not stopping on that sort of desolate point.
Chris, tell a joke.
Okay. Did you know that I got the Leslie Nielsen Award at my school when I was growing up?
No.
What's the Leslie Nielsen Award?
Oh, you bastard! No.
I've asked the wrong question.
You gotta go. What's that? You've got to go. What's that?
Oh, what's that?
Yeah. What's that? No. What's that?
It's a big building where children learn things in.
Sorry, yeah. I should have realised what the joke and the punchline were before I started bumbling into that one. Okay, I'll tell you a different joke. There's a big white horse goes into a bar, and he walks up to the barman and he says, I'd like a whiskey, what have you got? And he goes, well, I've got Famous Grouse, I've got Bells, I've got all sorts of, I've even got one named after you. And he goes, what, Fred?
Oh, right, yes.
White horse? It's a whiskey, yeah, yes.
Okay. My turn.
I was going to say, there's actually two parts to that joke, but I'm not going to bring the other part in because I can barely talk as it is.
What did Cinderella say when she got to the ball?
I don't know.
Oh, I know where this is going. Right, Chris?
Yeah. Did we end it there?
Well, she sucked that blackhead right out.